From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Aaron asks Joey about new words, and Joey offends Aaron.
Woo! Oh, hi. This is what a Joey sounds like.
What's up, guys? This is what an Aaron sounds like.
Oh, God, the rich timber.
Yep. Timber.
Timber. And this is what a Southern etiquette teacher, Jess, an executive producer, Jess Vander, sounds like. Shit.
Hi, this is Jess. You know, I asked Trevor, one of our other strategists at Sylvain Labs yesterday, if being prim is one of the predominant traits associated with my personal brand.
Interesting.
And he was like, hmm.
Yeah. Well, proper.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I definitely give you proper. Don't feel like I have a strong enough grasp on prim.
On prim. It's sort of like, here.
It's kind of like prim with a motorcycle jacket, though, is where, like, there's something there. Like, I don't know.
Wow. Prim with a motorcycle jacket. Like, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Here we go. Prim is stiffly formal and respectable, feeling or showing disapproval of anything regarded as
checks
improper.
Checks out.
Yep. But again,
wherever
Jess
the disapproval thing comes in, that's, we know that's checking out.
But it's like, again, you, I believe, are prim with motorcycle jacket.
Sweet.
And like,
I'll
maybe
take it.
Like studded gloves.
Aaron, what are we talking about today?
Oh, right. I got to talk about the things. So. Let me take you on a little story. So this week,
spin a yarn.
I was about to say spin a yarn, and then I was like, I don't have my loom. I can't do that. So this week I was working. I don't. That's a thing.
Well done.
You know that we do. And
I have a job.
Shocking. I was reviewing some content, and you know we're a strategist. So for those who aren't strategists, we spend all day talking and writing. That's the world that we live in. So I'm like editing a thing and it's like a really low stakes point of view. Like I'm just going to go in and like change one word. And then next thing I know, I'm changing five words. And then next thing I know, about 30 minutes later, I've written five new pages to this point of view. And it's like, oh God, what have I done? But And so it's a very common rabbit hole to fall into. But I stopped, leaned back in my chair, opened up my newspaper, stared out the window, and said to myself, why do we rewrite perfectly good words?
I'm immediately imagining you as Carrie Bradshaw staring out your window and asking yourself these, like, so my question is, why do we write new words? And can you ever find a man?
Well, and the thing, I love that you say that on her, like, what, 1996 MacBook with, like, or iMac with the green top. Like, she rarely has to hit the backspace button.
Yeah.
Like, they zoom in on that screen and everything just flows.
Her and Doogie Howser.
Perfect. Yes. They just, everything writes perfectly.
Ugh. Great, Mavis Beacon. We get it. You're good at typing.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best.
Even in your introduction to this, you used a word that previously didn't even exist, right? Like content.
Yeah.
Content is just like a word for stuff on the internet, right?
Yeah.
And it elevates it so much more.
Meteoric rise from not a word to king.
Yes.
Content is king, apparently.
That's what they say about Zion Williamson when it comes to basketball.
Sports.
Ooh, callback.
It is a sports ball.
So, but I'm curious, like, when you're talking about rewriting perfectly good words, is it about sort of like the idea of over editing, or is it about the idea of like inventing new words?
I think it is a little bit of both. What I find really difficult in writing in general is being a perfectionist. I want to use the only tool that I have, which is words, to communicate the complexity and nuance of ideas, you mm-hmm. know? And that's so like self-indulgent to describe writing that way,
yeah.
But like that's what it's all about. I'm trying to like perfectly articulate the thing. And then not only perfectly articulate the thing, like I'm not just trying to paint a painting, I'm trying to make you feel something and make you understand something too.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of that together just by using the limited alphabet that we have. So part of it is like trying to create and recreate context over and over and over again and like rebuilding the perfect context for sharing an idea. so that when anyone reads it or when most people read it, they go, oh, that's so smart. I get it all. The world is open.
Yep. That's how we react to things.
I don't know. I like it. But that. But then I think like creating new words is oftentimes a part or like an exercise in trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we do this with phrases all the time, right? Like euphemisms become like these turns of phrase that we throw in to fill gaps and hopefully add some color to something that we don't otherwise know how to communicate.
Yeah, or idioms. I mean, I love idioms.
Oh, yeah.
I think
Aaron is the king content of Aaron is the content of idioms.
I love that. I did not know that that was a thing of mine.
I mean, idioms are so the thing that I'm coming to on this is sense making, right? Like the goal is to make someone understand, and you can do that in like there is no necessarily perfect way to make someone understand, but as long as they get or feel what you're saying, and that's sort of what I love about idioms. Mm. I also like that idioms are often like kind of gross or weird or you know, or like they mean things and everyone gets it, but no one actually is thinking about what the words actually mean. They're just mm-hmm. like, oh, that's what you mean. Got it. Check.
Are there some new idioms? Because actually when I think of idioms, I actually think of like older things that used to mean something that now it's like, why do we use that phrase for a thing that is no longer a thing?
I run into new idioms all the time and they like delight me in a way that I can't explain. Like it is something like in my soul, like an idiom comes in and is just like tickling like this like nebulous ball of Joey somewhere in the nether spaces. And it's just like, oh, doo-doo. Like my wife said one recently about, I don't even remember what she was talking about, but I'd never heard this one before where she was like, you can't ride two horses with one ass. And I was just like, yes, we've done it. And I was
just like, found the perfect one.
We've done it.
Yeah, I just like stopped and like stiffened up my body with like delight. I was like, that is so good. Like, how did you come up with that one? It's so true. And I know exactly what you mean by that. It's like, mm-hmm. pick one thing, do one thing. You can't like be everything to all people. Like you can use it in a lot of different contexts, but someone can quickly understand what you mean by that idea because it's been so like boiled down into this perfect thing. And I like the gross ones too, or like, yeah.
I mean, there are also like classic ones that do the total opposite, where if you don't understand anything about it, you just have to know. Like, yes, I just pulled up a list of idioms just to reference this. This is not like I'm an idiom library, but like break a leg. Why would that be good luck? Why? In what world would it be like, no, 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 please shatter your femur. That's going to go real well for you. Like,
oh, you have a big presentation today? I hope you get a compound fracture.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hope it's maybe it could be a hairline. Like, maybe it'll sneak up on you later. But, like, it's the complete opposite of, like, an idiom being really good at communicating something universally if you just get the words. Because, like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are, like, in intensity, too. Right? Like, there's sort of an intensity to certain idioms that, like... So my mom is not a gross person. I mean, she's a nurse, so she's like familiar with gross stuff, but she doesn't like go around talking about gross things. But some of the idioms that she has that have like must have just been passed down generations or like encountered in work environments, I'm like, that idiom sort of contradicts with the way that you speak in general. And so it becomes interesting. Like she has one talking about like if someone looks bad, like they look sort of run down or whatever, that she says they look shit at and hit.
Which I love.
And I'm just like,
love that so much.
What does that even mean? But I immediately, like the first time I had heard her say it, I was like, I immediately know what you mean, but where did that phrase come from? But it was just so clear. You're just like, oh no, they look terrible.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. But it's more visceral. There's something like really intense about it.
And this is one of the thing with euphemisms and idioms and all of that sit in there is a little bit of a challenge sometimes because like there's some of them that are perfectly communicative and there are other turns of phrase too that like just become useful in writing to just be a shortcut. But then like I know that I find sometimes in my writing there are almost too many of them and you end up with like all of these little bridges speckled throughout something and it's like, wait, but what? Like sometimes you just, if you miss a loop, it doesn't make sense. And if you miss multiple loops, you've just
not a sweater.
Lost the person.
I mean, right? Isn't that why students and classes across the world study Shakespeare, who we have to bring up in this conversation, right? Mm. Like the dude who invented a bunch of words because he didn't think that the ones that were available to him were satisfactory enough. So he was like, well, I'm just going to make up assassination.
Yeah.
And now that's obviously part of the English vocabulary.
Which for those who don't know, means when you put your ass on a nation.
Yes. I thought it was two. Ass in nation.
Oh, no.
It was really bad. I didn't know this. This is totally what
he's
the fuck?
Like a gajillion words we owe to Shakespeare, and also really interesting types of idioms we also owe to him.
Ooh.
And can be uncovered by, like, I don't know if he invented, like, biting one's thumb at somebody.
Right.
But, oh my right, God, like, that is basically, like, flipping someone the bird. Or,
also an idiom, by the way. Yeah. Flipping someone the bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. What birds are you flipping?
Are we like cooking in cast iron?
Flap, flap.
But the question about coming up with new words is interesting for like the purpose. Like if you can't find a word that captures the idea, right? Like fundamentally it's all coming down to like sense making again, and like there isn't a word that exists for putting your ass on a nation, so you need to invent assassination.
Yeah. I mean, well, German does this a lot too, right? Like there's lots of individual words that just like they just cluster together into one mega word.
Yeah. All right, I'll find
Buckpfeifengesicht.
Wow.
That one means a person whose face, or no, a face that looks like it needs punching effectively. like someone has a Buckpfeifengesicht, it means like they have a face that needs punching.
That's
and like the so German like I heard that one and I was just like, oh, that is perfect.
Well, there's another one. It's, I just heard about this one the other day, but it's not as interesting. But it's is it Frubbelgeif? Which is,
we're gonna need some of our German listeners to help us out.
Yeah,
on this one.
This is real bad. We're gonna need the critical nonsense, critical editing to fix that.
Corrections department,
but
German
it is
Germany.
Yeah. The creator of Kindergarten created a series of gifts. His name is Froebel, and he had gifts, and they like made it one word, which is like Froebel's gifts, because that's more efficient.
Oh,
and now they're
Schadenfreude. Right, Schadenfreude is a German word about like taking pleasure in other people's pain that is now a commonly used word in English for that idea because it is like captured something that everyone's like, no, that's totally a thing.
I very much enjoy
when that person feels bad.
Well, yes. And what's cool about that is a word like Schadenfreude is like so specific that we need not rewrite it.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I don't know. There isn't an English word that describes it sufficiently. And I don't think we've ever tried to come up with something right, because you need a whole sentence to explain what that means.
Yes.
And I guess that's why I wonder, you know, for words that are perfectly fine, that do the job, we'll still rewrite them anyway. Right.
Absolutely.
So like the Germans definitely are onto something in coming up with cool. Everybody, all languages come up with portmanteaus to solve for words that they don't have.
Portmanteau.
What about words that exist? Yeah.
For example,
portmanteau. But what about words that already exist?
I believe that it is all on a long arc to us just being able to read each other's thoughts. Like, essentially, like, we're trying to be more efficient in getting words and ideas into each other's heads with as few words or syllables as whatever as possible. Like, just let's connect our mind grapes, make our mind wine together. Kind of like you would, like with a California white blend or something like that, or like different grapes.
Got it.
Nice table wine.
But I do think it's all about like, how can we make the distance between what's going on in the cosmos and your experience and in your head understandable to me?
Yeah, I'm curious, are there words specifically that you're thinking about that are like, this word was good and then we just made up a new word for the same good thing?
Okay, I have one.
I'm very excited because I don't.
Okay. So subscriptions and subscribing to stuff, isn't that just leasing? So like when you lease a place or a thing, you're just borrowing it and you're paying for the opportunity to use it, right? So like if I subscribe to Netflix, I am renting the opportunity to use Netflix.
But you've already used two words.
Yeah, but so renting and leasing are different, I guess, because leasing is typically more associated with homes and renting is maybe more broad. Mm-hmm. But even still, why do we need a third word? We already had two.
I have to say, it doesn't dismantle the argument. Like, we already have a perfectly good word for describing our relationship with this thing. Why did we have to have like five more? And you know what? I don't know. I think it's inefficient. And as a captain of efficiency, let's turn this boat around. Fewer words for all.
I'm like, I like new words. I'm just like, yeah, let's make up new words all the time.
Is it because it feels new?
I like when there are like new words that feel like they capture something that you know, like the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows, which is like all made up words for like weird, sad concepts. Are you pulling it up?
Yeah.
Can you read us like one or two of them? Like, they're just like these ideas that are like weird bits of ennui or sadness, but like very specific that you're like, yeah, no, I know that feeling. I'm mm-hmm. glad there's a word for it now. Like, I like that idea. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've invented any of my own words.
Oh,
although
goodness.
I do have some Urban Dictionary entries, not telling you what they are.
They're bad.
I think you've flaunted one of them mm-hmm. around before, so not we've definitely heard it. But okay, the top of the Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows today, April 2019, 18. Okay. is midding, verb. Feeling the tranquil pleasure of being near a gathering, but not quite in it. Hovering on the perimeter of a campfire, chatting outside a party while others dance inside, resting your head in the back seat of a car, listening to your friends chatting up front. Feeling blissfully invisible, yet still fully included, safe in the knowledge that everyone is together and everyone is okay, with all the thrill of being there without the burden of having to be.
What's the word again?
Midding.
Because Aaron heard midding and melted.
I literally did. It's like it gave me permission to mid. That's like why I liked it so much. It's like I'm always wanting to do that, but I throw myself into the center of the zeitgeist and I want to just sit on the perimeter. That makes me happy.
You want to be a zeitghost? Ooh, invented one. Yes.
That's Joey. That's like peak Joey. That really is. That really is. But I do like new words. I do like the idea that we haven't, like, our vocabulary and our language not only is completely alive, which is one thing, mm-hmm. but then also we haven't found the best ways to articulate a thing mm-hmm. at all. Like, there's too many of the things. So I like making up words too. I think I do it a lot. Herodom, again.
Yeah.
Calling things back.
Herodom.
But it is because sometimes you need a different anchor. You need a different vantage point.
Yeah.
To allow people to assess an idea differently. So I think it's beneficial to rewrite new words, because if we don't rewrite new words, we can't create new languages and create new connections.
Yeah, there's always new ideas. Let's make new words for them.
Rainbows.
Mind grapes is a new word.
There's actually like a source to that.
Oh, frick.
Well, let's
frick.
Talk.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay, I'm not going to open it back up. Battlestar Galactica, frack. That will be the end of it.
Battlestar Galactica, okay, bye. So there is some connection. I don't know if there's always a connection between our topics or just the way that your brain works. You can find a connection, I guess.
Yes.
So I've been reading a few articles recently, and I saw a woman who wrote a new book. Her name is Ershan Manji, I believe is how you pronounce it. Ershan Manji. Mm. She wrote a book called Don't Label Me, and she was doing like a press circuit, and I saw a few things come up in her talking about the book, and I found it interesting because there had been some other things. Like, I got like a Medium article sent in my email that was sort of adjacent to it and things like that around the idea of offense, right? And it was the first time that I'd seen someone talk about this in this particular way, and she was talking about the idea. I believe the way that she articulated it was that offense is the price of diversity. Like, you have to endure offense in a diverse culture, and that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. But with all of the, you know, conversations that we have now and outrage culture and fighting against legitimate things that we should be offended against, you know, I feel like maybe we turn up our offense sensors and are starting to maybe not understand how to deal with things that or to sort of like separate things that are like, yes, we should be legitimately offended. That is like an offensive thing versus like someone that you know doing something in a situation and also taking equivalent offense. I haven't really thought it through all the way. And so I wanted to talk to you guys about it because I'm sort of wondering, what is the power of offense?
Well, yeah. I mean, the first thought is like, you've got chain link, you've got white picket, you've got different types of.
Wait, is this the second time we've brought up fences on this show?
Maybe. Yeah. Chain link. Yeah.
Viola Davis. When I got there, I'm like sweating.
Chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many options.
Like, at first, I was like, these are like. Like militant groups somewhere.
The chain link group, yes.
Like white nationalist groups or something.
Well, so I think it's important before even like starting to get into this to talk a little bit about like, I think it's impossible to ignore the fact that this conversation is often used or versions of this conversation are often used by hate groups to legitimize their positions.
100%.
And I will go on record as saying that that is not our stance. Not that this is a podcast of running around like saying our stances, but I think it's really important because as we get into this, I think it's gonna like take us into interesting things, and we're gonna talk about
a lot. And it's important to interpret the conversation in the way that we're not my perspective is sort of like in your everyday life interacting with the real people in the real world, not in like Twitter beefs and dealing with hate groups and people using hate speech. Or like, there is a class of stuff that I think we sort of broadly agree as a majority in a culture is offensive, such as hate speech. We've instituted laws around it. Like, those things are wrong. I think there's not a debate around those things. But the idea of sort of encountering different ideas that are sort of presented in, whether it's at work or with friends or, you know, encountering diverse perspectives and whether or not you choose to perceive those things as offensive or not, right? Like, or the difference between offensive and offense.
Yeah, let's break that down, because even thinking about this in preparation for this episode, Aaron and I were thinking about sort of the two steps of offense. Step one is the moment of interpretation. So let's say person A says a thing, person two interprets that thing and feels something. The second step of offense is then reacting to that interpretation. So whatever you as person B say back or physically respond back out of that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about both, right?
Yeah, I think and I think that's the big part that Ershan Manji was talking about, was like, she was talking about like in schools, we need to train kids not to be so easily offended or to understand that like the difference of when or how you should feel offended. And I think like the crux of that is like offense is when you're feeling attacked, and right, like you feel like someone's done has, you know, presented an actual like affront upon some set of values or your existence or whatever it is. And so like you can understand why hate speech or things like that is offensive. It is an attack on a set of people or whatever it is. The other situations are like, you know, taking offense. When we were talking before the show, is like, you know, if someone, you're at like a nice dinner and someone makes like a gross reference or a poop joke or something at a nice dinner, you might be offended by that idea because you believe that that is like not the context for which you should be making those kind of references or something.
Which, by the way, is also the setup for like every 1950s boss coming to dinner moment of like, you say the thing and then everybody leans in and they're like, how is he going to react? Oh my God, because he's definitely a guy because it's 1950. Yeah. And then all of a sudden everybody's like, or he laughs like, whoa! And everybody's like, oh, the tension is relieved.
Yeah.
He didn't react the way that we expected. I say all that because there is something implied in that, which is like, everybody chooses how they're going to react to something. That's where our power actually rests. And I do think that there is something to learning how to be critical in your responses on an everyday rolling basis.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is a way to be emotionally critical and to think about how are my actions or how my reactions going to change the dynamic of this situation. But I also think that people are responsible for what they put into the world. People are responsible for recognizing social mores and paying attention to and just thinking about how someone else might react to something and acting in a responsible manner. And when I say responsible, it's less so responsible and more so literally considerate. Like, mm-hmm. considering the other person, considering the context, considering the moment in which it's delivered. Because it's not, I think that offense oftentimes puts the burden on the recipient of stimulus, whereas it is absolutely a dialogue.
Right. But like the question becomes like in a diverse culture, right? Like that sort of premise of like America, the melting pot, does our culture itself also have to be, sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't have to be a monoculture, right? Like that there can be different cultures, different perspectives, different views, different ways of behaving. And I think the idea is like you as an individual have a responsibility to understand when someone's attacking you or when someone or like attacking your set of values of or mores around etiquette or behavior, or when they're just like they're presenting in a certain way. Like the concept, I think we talked about at some point around language, and that that the sort of language of college is this like collegiate mm-hmm. academic language, and to do well in college you need to be able to speak that specific language, and like wealthy, like, you know, well-educated kids coming up into college have that language, but poor folks, minority folks, things like that don't speak that language yet. And that's sort of an example of you're forcing people's failure or success in that environment into being able to perform in a monoculture. And I think like when we interact with other folks on a day-to-day basis, especially in New York, where you have this diverse way of interacting and approaching things, if someone does something that you're unfamiliar with, you have the choice to say, like, this is offending my way that you raise kids, or this is offending my belief on how you should interact with a significant other, or whatever it is, versus saying, like, oh, that's different and it's not an attack on me, but I can still, like, maintain my belief while allowing another person to maintain their belief.
Though there is definitely a distinction between things being different, people being different, groups of people being different, and our modern capability of processing our feelings, particularly angry ones,
mm-hmm.
or things that shock us or surprise us, mm. which is, I think, typically the reason that offense can turn into weird reactions, or not even weird, but like really strong responses. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is quite separate from our ability or comfort with experiencing different things, because not all different things are going to be negative per se. It's mm-hmm. just that it is different at all. And so I guess on the subject of offense, what do we see as something that is so different that shock or surprise or sort of like the circuit not connecting? At what point does that turn us to react negatively and strongly? Like, why does that make us like freak out?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that like we
outrage culture.
Well, I think that there's like a fundamental thing of like we want to be comfortable, like whether it's physically, physiologically, like we seek comfort. We don't seek to be in a state of discomfort, generally speaking, whether it's intellectual, psychological, or physiological. And I think that like we're a little bit hardwired, even me, I don't know, now I'm getting into cellular biology, which I know nothing about, but like we reject others. Like our blood cells are looking for things that are like, our white cells look for different things that like are coded as enemies, and then they attack them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we shouldn't be in attack mode all the time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we can't act as though we are just white blood cells, like just an entity that can only react.
Oh my, Aaron.
Did I do something?
Yeah. Well, okay. So on the subject of turning science analogy into a relevant motif for
which is
our conversation.
Jess's happy place.
Classic. Comfortable.
Yes.
Is what sort of, are we suggesting that what Irshad Manji, sorry if I'm butchering her name, is suggesting is that we must work on building up immunity, so to speak.
To offense.
To offense, yeah. Such that when the real stuff comes, we're ready for it, and otherwise, like, little antibodies can otherwise like fend off the icky stuff that's just small and unimportant.
Yeah. I think that is sort of like some of where I think you can train yourself to maybe you'd mentioned being a little bit slower in your reaction to because I think taking offense, if you're quick to offense, you're almost invariably not allowing yourself to see the other person's perspective, right? Like if you're like, I feel this way. And then it becomes, it's a little bit narcissistic if we're taking it outside of like the genuine attacks on like people's culture or bodies or things like that. Like then it becomes like, I have a feeling and my feeling is the right way. And so you're sort of taking that away. And I think like there are plenty of times where I've done like offensive things that are not against those situations, but like I've offended a cultural norm within like a corporate context, right? Like some clients that we work with are like very comfortable with swearing, right? Like swearing is like a prime example of someone like something small can all of a sudden be very offensive. And I, you know, at one point in a client presentation, we had like a quote up from a consumer that had the word shit in it. And it was just like a very visceral response to something. And so I read the quote and I didn't like bleep out in my language that the person said shit because I was reading a direct quote. But it was like wildly offensive to this group of people that I said that one word as like a direct rereading of something. And I think like that, you know, I think this week I was quoting a movie and I like yelled fuck somewhere in the office and Jess like turned to me and was like, what is the meaning of this?
School mom, prim Jess is here.
But then she pulled out the leather jacket and it was
fine. Right, and then I pulled out my leather jacket and everyone was like, ah, never mind.
Yeah, and the switchblade popped up.
Whoa, okay. But, right, I guess what you're saying is for someone, you say, Joey, versus maybe a person like me, probably are thinking about this in your day-to-day actions more often because, I don't know, maybe you might elicit more responses from people like me than the other way around, which is, I guess this is probably why you think about it. And for me, I think my sort of modus operandi is I would rather not, like, I don't have a problem with being more cautious or erring on the side of cautious behavior because I am naturally going to think that way and be extremely observant, ideally, just in case. That would be bad. I say that, and then I realize that sometimes when it comes to discussing work-related matters, then I don't think about those things at all. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
And but no one's, like, completely one way or another.
For sure. But when it comes to, you know, offending people personally, I wonder, you know, are there things that we can take away for those who are naturally less filtered?
Yeah.
I have so many.
I
have so many. And I look at the table as I say that, too, because I, like, it's on my mind probably as much as it may be as much as it is on yours, because I am constantly thinking about like how not to offend.
Yeah.
And for many reasons, that's a whole different podcast episode. Right. But I think like being very vigilant about how let me caveat this by saying I don't think these are all good things.
Yeah.
And I think that
for sure,
just like anything, they can be overdone. But being very hyper vigilant about how you present yourself is like one of them. Just like presentation.
Yeah.
What are the cues that you send out into the world verbally and visually, and use what you can presume about those responses to your advantage?
Yeah. To me, that is also just part and parcel of intelligence. Are you being observant is one of the facets.
Emotional intelligence specifically. Yeah.
Right. Well, and also, yeah, I guess that's a way to think about it. But can you not only sense what people are feeling in the room, but can you look around you physically in the space and be aware of something you might not have seen or were otherwise thinking about?
Yeah. And the second component, this is the last thing.
Yeah, no,
the,
go, like, go.
I think it's the vigilance, and then it's the Bran Stark maneuver. It's the, like, put yourself into someone else's shoes immediately and completely and quickly, and then go right back into your own body. Like, doing that constantly is something that I find to be incredibly exhausting and not always necessary or fruitful or completely useful. But when it is useful, it allows me to, like, figure out how to make a more persuasive argument, figure out how to understand why someone might have said something the way that they did, that they didn't intend, like, they didn't intend for it to come out that way. It is the type of empathy that allows me to get my way.
Yeah.
Which is what it's really all about, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, this conversation, like, the topic that I talked about, like, I brought to the show last week, are both, like, sensitive subjects, and I think we hopefully have managed to have, like, healthy discussions. And the idea, like, we're in a safe room right now, right? Like, we all know and love each other and, like, are willing to give each other the benefit of the doubt. And if I say something stupid, you can be like, no, that's dumb. You're a big, stupid idiot and you can't read good.
Poophead.
Yeah. You're stupid, you smell bad, and you can't read good.
I've never said that, but most other things.
Also,
but I think the idea of, like I think that I'm pretty good at reading other people, but I'm also very comfortable, like, pushing to the edge of that comfort zone. And I think that dynamic, you know, like, I'm not trying to make someone uncomfortable. I'm trying to be like, this is my comfort space, that's your comfort space, and I will come right to the edge of your comfort space as it relates to my comfort space and like, push things. And that's also just, you know, me being, like, an idiot.
I don't know about that, but I mean, for you and those like you, part of it is just, like, be careful.
Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes, as emotionally intelligent as you and others might be, you also might get it wrong. And whether
100% and, do right, it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if that can be okay sometimes, and you can be with people who interpret it all right, and then others who are sad.
But, like, if you have the conversation, then right, like, if I do something that's offensive, like, Jess and I have had this conversation, be like, I don't like that. And I'll be like, why don't you like that? Like, you know, like, if you can approach it without being like, no, you're wrong, that's right. Like, right, like, the idea of Jess saying, I don't like it, and I'm like, well, I don't care. Like, that's, you know, like, that's not how you can grow and learn and change context for individuals, but, you know.
And I've never thought about that simple idea that maybe there is just, let's just pretend that there's two types of people in the world.
Yeah.
Those who have a gravitational pull toward the center of that, like, social impropriety zone or whatever. And those that tap dance like Lady Gaga on the edge of glory, who are
edge
just
lords.
Like, let's figure this out. Let's be edge lords. All. So yeah, I think that
let's tap dance.
Pa 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 ta pa. Ta da ta pa ta poo ka ha. Ta da ga pa ta poo cha 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 pa da pa ta pa ta ta ta. Boom ba 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 ba. Boom ba boom ba boom ba 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 ga. Tooty.
Critical Nonsense is Nonsense and a Sylvain Labs production.
And said nonsense was recorded in beautiful MacGyver Studios in equally beautiful New York, New York.
We'd like to thank executive producer and prim motorcycle jacket wearing Jess Vander.
We'd like to thank sound engineer and occasional edge glorifier Alex Contel.
We'd like to thank designer Nora Mestrich for tap dancing across the music world.
Mm-hmm. and the crew that never gets offended by anything. Production team, Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vong.
And as always, thanks, Alin.
Thank you. Who are you thanking, Joey?
I'd like to thank the corrections department in Germany, led by Jess Vander, also head of the corrections department, emailing us at criticalnonsense@sylvainlabs.com with all the corrections.
Thank you, department. I would like to thank Egg Fondue.
What? Wait.
That sounds so disgusting.
Are the eggs going in the fondue? Is the fondue made of eggs?
You have a buck fifing gazee.
Is that like French toast? Is that just French toast? I just need to know. What are we talking about?
I just like throwing these types of grenades. I love it. Oh, God.
That's offensive.
How dare you suggest fondue?
To my gastronomic sensibilities. Ketchup is offensive.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Umami. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, see, that's where offensive can go. It's like, no, ketchup is offensive because yes. I am a foodie.
Well, if you put ketchup on the wrong thing, mm-hmm. I mean, that could deeply offend the chef.
I mean, the first time that you saw mayo on fries, we all kind of went like...
I think
actually, the Europeans are onto something, but...
I think mayo is like hate speech in that it is just offensive.
You're not wrong. Who else would you like to thank?
I'd like to thank Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
For Teen Wolf.
I'd like to thank Teen Wolf. Not the Michael J. Fox one, but the MTV one. All five seasons. Incredible.
Why are we thanking Teen Wolf?
Because Michael J. Fox.
And also
American Treasure.
Okay. The more recent one. They're all really hot.
I would like to thank William Shakespeare.
That's more appropriate.
Contributing to today's conversation.
Zounds.
That is true.
No, it's not zounds. It's zounds.
Zounds.
No, I offended.
No, you were just wrong.
I'd like to thank idioms.
Because
they're great.
I'd like to thank you, euphemisms.
I hate euphemisms. They're not offensive enough.
I hate you, euphemisms.
Well, I also want to thank fences of all types. You're all welcome in my home. Or around it, at least.
You're not going to the restroom. You're not taking a nap in there. You're going to the toilet.
Did I miss something?
That's a euphemism.
Oh, I think I get it.
Actually, the Brits say that, don't they?
They say the WC.
The WC.
WC. You're like, I'm going to the bathroom.
The bog.
The bog. I'm going to go hit the head.
Thank you. Bye. That's gonna be
recorded. Yeah, so we begin. Hello, fellows.
Oh, Lord. Maybe we begin.
This is my proper voice.